think a lot of people struggle with this. A lot of people in the church and some outside believe that it's my own fault that I'm anxious. And if I could just conjure up a greater feeling of certainty that God is in control, then I wouldn't be anxious anymore. So I just need to study that more. I need to memorize it. I need to repeat it. When something bad happens in my life, I get a diagnosis that I don't want, or my kids go off in a direction that is something that's displeasing to me, or there's a financial problem or a crisis at work, just to remind myself that God is in control, that's what I need. Then I could kind of have this Zen experience. And what I want to say today is, no, that's not true for two reasons. Don't let your heart be troubled. You trust in God, Jesus says. You trust also in me. Now, if you've been a part of Become New, you may well know we just spent a bunch of weeks looking at how to live with an untroubled heart in a deeply troubled world. I thought we were done, but apparently I was wrong. A bunch of people wrote in and said, feels like we need to talk about this some more. And I felt myself like this topic is so wonderful. And John 14 and 15, the passage we were looking at, is so rich that there's just more to talk about. So we're doing a PS. And for one more week, five more episodes, I'm going to talk some more about how to live with an untroubled heart in a troubled world. And what I want to talk about today was actually prompted by a message that I got from a friend who said, I think a lot of people struggle with this. A lot of people in the church and some outside believe that it's my own fault that I'm anxious. And if I could just conjure up a greater feeling of certainty that God is in control, then I wouldn't be anxious anymore. So I just need to study that more. I need to memorize it. I need to repeat it. When something bad happens in my life, I get a diagnosis that I don't want, or my kids go off in a direction that is something that's displeasing to me, or there's a financial problem or a crisis at work, just to remind myself that God is in control. That's what I need. Then I could kind of have this Zen experience. And what I want to say today is, no, that's not true for two reasons. And the first reason is that God is not in control. And I'll say that one more time. God is not in control. Now, before you call the Heresy Hunter hotline, let me explain to you what I mean by that, because that places no limitations on God's power or God's competency or God's capacity to do what it is that God is doing in his great project. What does it mean to be in control? Well, for me, if I am in control, it means my will is being done. You probably recognize this little instrument that human beings in our great wisdom has devised so that there is a piece of technology in my living room, and this is called a remote control. And as long as I hold on to the remote control, then what happens on that screen is my will. My will is being done on that screen as it is in my own mind. Now, God does not operate the universe on the basis of or by means of a remote control. You might remember in the most famous prayer in human history, Jesus said we are to pray to God, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Now, why are we to pray that? Because right now, God's will is not being done on earth. There are many horrible things that are happening on earth. They are not God's will. In the beginning, in the Bible, in Genesis 3, God made it very clear to the man and the woman, you can eat from the fruit of the tree of every garden, every tree in the garden, but not from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's about the human desire to set our own rules, to be on the throne, to be in control. And then that's precisely what they do. In fact, no person in history has had their will violated more often than God. God's will is more violated than any other. Peter wrote in 2 Peter chapter 3, God is not willing that any should perish. God is not a controlling person. God is fully powerful. God is fully capable. But think about a controlling person. Do you want to be in a relationship with a controlling person? I remember working at a place where the boss was well known to be very controlling, and going one time to dog obedience school, And the person that was teaching us to train our dog said, now, when you give your dog a command, you have to do things to reinforce your power. Like, never give a command when you're down on eye level with a dog. You're up here and you make the dog be down there. Or if the dog scratches at the door because the dog wants to get out, you never do what the dog wants you to do. You make the dog do what you want the dog to do first, roll over or sit, and then you allow him to. And I just started to laugh because, like, those are the dynamics in this relationship to a T. It's like, this is a relationship with a controlling person. There was a TV movie years ago that was remade as a movie and remade in different versions, called The Stepford Wives. And in this film, women would be replaced by robots, and they were perfectly coiffed and dressed and always agreeable and loved to fix meals for their husbands and do their husbands' wills. But it was not a happy movie. It was a nightmare. It wasn't utopia. It was dystopia. Why? Because they weren't persons. And the God who made us is a God who loves persons. And so God allows us to experience freedom. And there are terrible things that happen in this world. The Holocaust, we look at the suffering going on right now in Ukraine, in Gaza, all over the place. And when Jesus teaches us, what he teaches us about God is that God has power, but God is love. And if the incarnation and the crucifixion teach us anything, they teach us that God will sacrifice power for love. He will never sacrifice love for power. Control, see, is a certain kind of power. It's coercive power. And God's power is so great that he does not have to control us. He is actually able to integrate, to weave together, to mesh, creating persons in his own image who have wills, who are able to choose, who can even refuse to do his will, and to work things out through the cross and his own sacrificial love, so that one day he will bring all things into redemption, so that one day his will be done through the power of love. So Jesus' invitation to us to live with an untroubled heart is not perceive God's will in all your circumstances. It's do God's will in all your circumstances. And that brings me to the second reason why trying to conjure up a belief that God's in control all the time will not deliver the life of an untroubled heart. And it has to do with the nature of what Jesus is inviting us to here. This verse, John 14:1, is translated, you believe in God, believe also in me. Unfortunately, in our day, that word belief often just gets understood as, I got to feel certain about this, and then I should try to make myself feel really certain about it. However, folks who write about passages like this one and the words that Jesus used will say, this is a Greek word, pistio, it can be, would most helpfully be translated trust. And the idea there is to rely on, or you might think about it like this, to have embodied belief, to believe at the deepest level. And there's a real important dynamic here around how that kind of belief gets embodied in us. And it's not just by chanting a mantra. I'll sometimes use this example years ago for a sermon. The team that was working with me at a church thought it'd be a good idea for me to jump out of a plane to demonstrate courage and faith and trust and so on. And they were friends, but not real good friends. And so I went ahead and did that. Now, before I jumped out of the plane, I just sit through an orientation, and they taught us all about parachutes and physics and how well made the parachutes were and the harnesses and how many pounds of pressure they could, and how safe it was. Statistically, I was safer jumping out of that plane than I was driving to the airport. And I believed. But when I got up to jump out of that open door, 14,000 feet over the earth, I discovered my armpits did not believe I was safe. And my sweaty palms did not believe I was safe. And they knew this was going to happen. They knew it so well. They actually said, people, the first time they jump out of a plane from 14,000 feet will not remember the first couple seconds. They are so overwhelmed by the experience that they're not able to consolidate it into long-term memory. Now, there are other people on that plane who believed with their whole body that they were safe. How is that so? Well, it wasn't because they sat through the orientation class a bunch. For the same kind of experience, I used to take our kids on a ropes course when they turned 12 years old, and there'd be a class ahead of time, and then kids would go up on the ropes course. But when they stood 25 feet above the ground, there was still fear in the body. Here's what's key. I remember Dallas Willard talking about this decades ago. The will is transformed by experience, not information. The will is transformed by experience, not information. Fascinating. We're going to talk some about a book by Jonathan Haidt, I think, in an upcoming series. And he's talking about development, but the need for risk. And he says almost exactly the same thing based on research. Experience, not information, is the key to emotional development. So here's the invitation. If I want to live where my trust in God can begin to trump the trouble in my heart and the trouble in this world around me, then the invitation is, Jesus talks about this over and over, to obey, to do the will of God, to do what it is that God commands. If you love me, obey my commands. Today, do the right thing. Do what God is calling you to do, and particularly do that if you are afraid of it. Because it is that experience. One of the problems that we tend to have in churches is that we think that maturity will come, growth will come through information alone. If I just listen to enough sermons, enough talks online, read these words enough, sit in the classroom. No. The will is transformed by experience, not information alone. Information, true information, is absolutely necessary, but it is not sufficiency. So now discipleship, actually, coming to obey Jesus, being with him and learning from him, to live like him, to do what he actually did, and then to discover, jumping out of the plane, being on that ropes course, giving, serving, speaking truth. I'm actually quite safe when I'm doing those things because God is right there with me, no matter what the outcome is in this world, no matter whether or not I might experience hurt. Then I discover, oh no, he's still here, he's still here, he's still here, he's still here. I am not alone. Not even death can interrupt that. So then my whole body, God, what a good life this is, when my armpits and the palms of my sweaty hands, my racing thoughts and my dry mouth can come to believe that I can trust God. Not that horrible things going on in this world are the will of God, quite the contrary. But God is present and working in the midst of them and with me. So today, the invitation is jump out of the plane, get up on the ropes course. God, what are you calling me to do? In particular, what are you calling me to do that I've been putting off because I'm afraid to do it? Maybe I depend too much on my money for my security, so God is inviting me to be generous in a quite concrete way. Maybe I depend too much on my having approval and things pleasant with other people in order to feel safe, and today I need to speak truth and confront somebody where I've been putting that off. Today, maybe I feel like I'm so busy that I got to wring every bit of leverage that I can out of all my time. And Jesus is calling me. You know what? There's going to be a guy that's beaten up on the side of the road someplace that I need to stop and help. There's an errand that I need to run. There's a service that I need to offer. Maybe there's a group of people that I've been kind of afraid of, or I kind of feel like I don't like, or there's a distance. And God is saying, no, you can go volunteer with those folks and give them some help. See, that's the ropes course for the disciple. The will is transformed by experience, not information alone. And then I can come to believe with my whole body what I already say right now. And that is a life of trust. And that is how we grow. Don't let your heart be troubled. Trust in God.
Hey, I'm Tim. I'm part of the team here at Become New. If you enjoyed that teaching from John, be sure to hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes from him. Right now, we're doing a little PS on the series Untroubled Heart that we concluded 2 weeks ago. But there were some things John wanted to mention that didn't make it in any episodes, and so we just decided to do a few extra. So that's what we're doing now. If you recall, at the beginning of Untroubled Heart, we issued a pre-series peace survey to gauge the peace of your heart, and over 1,000 of you participated in that, so thank you. Now we're issuing a post-series survey, and that will just help us learn and grow as a team to measure the impact of these teachings. So you can find the link to participate in that survey in the show notes below. We'd sure appreciate it. Also, I mean it when I say that there is a group of us who meet every weekday for 1 hour to pray for you and for any viewer who sends in a prayer request. So if you've got a burden or a prayer request, you don't have to bear it alone. We would love to pray for you. You can text it to us at the number 855-888-0444 or email it to us at connect@becomenew.com. You can also check out our website, becomenew.com, to find more resources like the email and other things that you might find interesting. Thanks for joining us. Remember that the most important thing about your life is the person you become. We'll see you next time.